Hell yeah, brother.
Waste your millions here, secretly, she says. Another corporate show, a guilty conscience grows. We are Hottest 100s and Thousands, and we have taken control of your radio station. This is the podcast in which we talk about the songs that have been deemed hot enough to be in the Triple J Hottest 100. My name is David James Young. I'm one of the four voices you're going to be hearing for the next hour. So joining me once again is Nathan Harrison.
Hi.
Adam Buncher.
Perfect place to waste your millions right here.
Oh, yeah. And Andrew McDonald.
I also need some millions if they're going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you got some millions, they're burning a hole in your pocket.
Mm. We will do, if you give us millions of dollars, a bonus episode.
Whoa. Yeah. And then if you drop another couple of million next season,
we'll do,
you know,
we'll think about it.
Then we'll link to the previous year's bonus episode.
That's right.
Now we'll record a new intro. Oh, no. We'll do commentary for the previous. I seriously want us to go back and do commentary for S01, E01.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good time.
I reckon that'd be so much fun.
I don't think $1 million is too much to ask
no,
for that.
No, not at all. We can have $1 million as a treat. Yeah,
nothing sounds as good as when all people speak over top of each other. And they're doing it over four people speaking over the top of each other.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, people buy DVDs for the commentary.
I've never been a comment. Like,
man, I pay it, man.
I guess maybe if I like actually
cared about
anything,
art form.
Or just if I, you know, loved a thing in life, then maybe I would.
Yeah, I don't even watch
it,
the things twice, let alone the things that aren't the things.
Yeah.
The best ones are the ones where it's like not a commentary, but like a documentary. That it's virtually a commentary, right? Like, like obviously, like Hearts of Darkness.
Oh, or like for National Lampoon's Holiday Vacation, the making of National Lampoon's Holiday Vacation was really good.
Also good, yeah.
Extremely good shit.
That Werner Herzog one,
that's the one I'm talking about.
Werner Herzog.
We brought in Chevy Chase and we say, Sever, you must go on vacation. And he said, What is my purpose? What is my purpose of going on vacation?
Your Werner Herzog is French.
It started really good, though.
It started okay. It is good.
It'd be like, I mean, the vacation that he goes on is the vacation of mankind. He tries to leave the home, but yet the family comes with him. Man can never escape the trappings of his domestic life.
That's pretty good.
There we go.
We got there. We just had to bypass Jacques Cousteau briefly.
I was going for more Gerard Depardieu.
Ah, yes. The other person in France.
Yes.
Le Big Trois.
Yeah, Le Big Trois. Le Grand Trois. You can always do a French accent. It's never racist.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Folks.
What's the first song, Dave?
Well, the last time we opened an episode, it was with PJ. And for this week's episode, we're doing something a little bit different, and we're opening with PJ. At number 85, this is Pearl Jam with Nothing As It Seems. With the song Nothing As It Seems from the album Binaural, coming in at number 85 in the 2000 Hottest 100. Nathan,
Here we are, once again.
Talking about Pearl Jam.
Talking debt taxes, talking about Pearl Jam.
It's like markers of through history where you're like, ah, now Pearl Jam are doing this.
Yeah, here are the hieroglyphs of ancient Egyptians talking about Pearl Jam.
Yeah. In the year 2000, Pearl Jam were recording binaurally. And that's cool, I guess. I saw a really good theater show with a binaural microphone in the middle. So binaural is where you have like omnidirectional, I guess you'd call it.
Omnidirectional recording.
Yeah, and so Adam can make my voice do this as, you know.
I absolutely cannot.
Not binaural mics.
But like, I thought I was the only binaural. I thought you guys were straight.
Hello.
Hey. But it's kind of like, yeah, directional in every
it's
way.
It's what ASMR people use.
Yeah, totally.
If you've heard
totally
of that. Like, it's where you can hear the voices move back and forth and around you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. They even have some binaural microphones because it's designed to naturally mimic like how you hear normally with ears. And so they actually have fucked up microphones that like look like giant tiki heads.
Yeah, they just look like heads.
Ears
and you're like, I don't need, like, I'm okay with a level of abstraction a bit more than that. Like, yeah. I'm okay with a microphone being a microphone.
Look, it's very handy with some ASMR clips to see you're the head and they're talking to you. It's
just
not that bad.
They're talking, okay.
I saw a good theater show where everyone had to like put on headphones. It was at the Opera House, but like, and there was a mic in the middle of the stage and everything happened around it. It was very cool.
That's pretty cool.
But that's how they recorded this song, and it's also the name of the album. Pretty cool, I guess. Like, it's weird to think of Pearl Jam being a band of like reinvention and innovation because they're still working within a fairly tight, you know, they're playing rock music. They're playing grungy rock music, and they never stray too far from that. But it is interesting seeing how much they do try and shift it and change how they write and record stuff. And part of that we've talked about is through necessity, as kind of the age of grunge went away and they were still like, well, we want to keep being a band. But I think it's interesting and it's weird and kind of interesting that we're still talking about them. We've talked about them in nearly every season, I think.
Yeah.
So this is a cool song. It's a very like dark droning kind of thing, like, you know, a lot of ways stripped back. It doesn't have that like big stadium maximalist energy that a lot of Pearl Jam songs do, but I kind of really love it for that. I think like that kind of descending guitar chord progression is beautiful. I think Eddie's vocals, while quite restrained, are just like really quite beautiful and moody and how in like that kind of crooning.
I think it shows that this song was written by the bassist Jeff Ament because that upright bass sound and the texture that kind of adds,
it's haunting.
It's a black hole of a song. Like there's no light
black
here.
Hole song.
It just reminds me so much of like stumbling around in the dark.
Yeah
like,
totally
kind of like drunkenly, like, and there's a kind of weird trying to get control or also like trying to lose control at the same time. And, or, you know, because that's going to make you freak out less if you just kind of accept that, oh, okay, like we're in the dark and it's, and I think that matches so nicely to what the song's kind of written about. It's really interesting because Jeff was kind of saying that he was reflecting back on his childhood after reading a bunch of books and finding that those books and the subject matter that they were about really uncovered some stuff that he'd kind of repressed. And that's kind of what the song's about.
He was like, I thought I had a really good childhood, but now I'm actually remembering things and maybe I didn't. And that's going to be a very like ungrounding experience.
Mm. Not every song on the record was recorded with binaural mics, but this was one of them.
Oh, right. Okay.
And I think that's really good here because you can tell the mix is very, very spacious.
Totally,
the
right.
Double bass sound kind of is like a drone that kind of carries it through the whole song, and the guitar work almost has like a neo psych or like there's like elements of post punk aesthetic with the drum kind of tone, particularly the snare sounds very post punky. Mm-hmm. Like
just the echo on everything as well, just all of that.
As much as like you said, they haven't really strayed too far from their roots as they've gone on as a band. They're still just playing rock music after all. But compared to like Pearl Jam of 8 years ago, it's quite a different sound.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think it speaks to their maturity as songwriters. And it's often when people speak about Pearl Jam, they're speaking about Eddie Vedder as a songwriter and a performer kind of thing like that. And that's all well and good. But I think like Arment's lyrics in this, like in terms of that kind of thing of like wanting to travel home kind of thing, the last verse where he says, it's nothing as it seems, the little that he needs, it's home. The little that he sees is nothing, he concedes, it's home. And all that he frees, a little bittersweet, it's home. It's nothing as it seems, the little that you see, it's home. This kind of like abstract kind of poetic kind of way to view that, like the melancholic and the crack in the facade is actually home. You come to this acceptance that's a bit more bittersweet, a bit more melancholic than you initially may have recalled, kind of thing. But it's a very fucking beautiful song, I think. I think it's really wonderful.
Or potentially darker than that. And maybe I'm just reading too much into the one line that kind of mentions methadone or whatever. But if you're like thinking of it being in a song about addiction as well, you know, like, and thinking of what home is in, for, you know, in that sense, is kind of even darker in terms of being lost in that. Because I really think this is a song about being lost, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you're constantly returning to this idea of home, then you really are just kind of like stumbling around trying to find your way. What I love is that Pearl Jam deliberately wrote this in order to challenge their fan base. They said, like, we want to throw this out as a bit of a challenge. And
because this was the lead single.
Yeah. Mm. And to Pearl Jam's fans' credit, they came with them in a big way. And this has since become like a fan favorite song and performed live quite frequently. Credit to Pearl Jam fans. I mean, the band has trained them incredibly well to be prepared for anything at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Considering the last time we spoke about Pearl Jam, it was the My Baby Died in a Car cover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So much more mature and accomplished musically here than they at all were there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really fascinating track, I think. I really like knowing that Pearl Jam, by force of necessity to kind of stay relevant, have had to reinvent their sound so many times, even if it's just kind of tweaking a formula. The guitar in this is present, but it's just like kind of like effect pedal driven kind of little riffs here and there.
Mm. Yep.
And it's the spacious arrangement and the bass that drive this song.
It's not even flow.
No,
you know.
But even I feel like there's a real like Hendrix-iness to that solo as well.
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah. It's a wonderful solo.
Yeah, it's good. And I think it really sinks into the space that the rest of the song builds.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a sucker for psychedelica, like in music and rock music in particular anyway. So like it ticks that box for me. This is the only time we get to talk about Pearl Jam in this countdown though.
This was their first album to not go platinum.
It still went gold.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, rich white rock dude problems. Yeah. But, like, you could definitely tell, like, the audience was a bit,
both my ears?
Mm, I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, this is the age of sharing headphones with a friend.
That's true. Yeah. True.
You're fucking up everybody.
Yeah, do we
not
have
everybody
iPods
has a
yet?
Headphone splitter.
Yeah.
iPods, they not yet?
Not yet.
Not yet.
2000, no way.
So
no.
Discmans.
A little bit off, yeah.
Discmans. 2000, though, you're looking at some pretty good anti-shock technology.
Yeah, true.
You can probably walk with one.
Well,
and it's not going to skip the
back of the bus
disc too much.
Won't fit in your pocket.
Oh god! Well, it depends how big your shorts are.
Yeah. Oh, true.
If you
had some baggy shorts, for
some baggy shorts in 2000.
If you went rocking the JNCOs, like you ain't listen to Pearl Jam. JNCOs, if you're listening, I would take a sponsorship from you.
I'll take a mad spono. Hey,
what are we? Sorry, JNCOs.
Really, really, really wide jeans.
Right.
Comically wide. They make Kevin Smith's jorts look like they're well-fitting.
I see.
Man, really fucking inside baseball here with the jeans tour. Yeah. But at least all the jeans head listeners are going ballistic.
So, oh, yeah.
Jeans listeners, write us in. Tell us your favorite jean.
Please do. Please do.
What's your favorite jean? We'll come to this when we, you know.
Good.
Yeah, we'll cross that.
Because I was just about to say, because I know them.
No, don't alienate any of the jeans heads.
Yeah.
We've talked about over a dozen Pearl Jam songs at this point, and out of the originals, this might be the least quote-unquote Pearl Jam song that we've talked about. Leaving Here and Last Kiss have excuses for not sounding like Pearl Jam because they're not technically Pearl Jam songs.
Yeah.
But these are, which makes things a little more interesting to me. As you mentioned, this is a really experimental era for the band, and the fact it went gold instead of platinum means not everyone was on board with it, not willing to kind of go along with it, but those that were, I think, were really rewarded because, yeah, this has kind of become like a cult favorite record. Like, this is a cool answer to give as your favorite Pearl Jam record, you know what I mean? This record was the debut of Matt Cameron. So Matt joined after Yield came out. So former Red Hot Chili Peppers drummer Jack Irons was playing drums for them at the time. And then he left before the Yield tour. And Matt Cameron, formerly of Soundgarden, joined and has played with the band ever since. And I find it really interesting purely from a drumming standpoint because Matt Cameron routinely has been a drummer that has all the subtlety of a swinging hammer. He also made a fucking wild record a few years back. It was him, Janet Weiss, and Zach Hill.
Yeah,
three drum kits, one room, a 45-minute improvised three-kit drum solo called Drumgasm.
Uh-huh.
That's a real thing.
Oh, okay. Sure.
It's really fucking good.
Okay, cool.
So it's really interesting to see him in this kind of environment where he really has to kind of draw it back. Again, by means of contrast, Mike McCready's guitar solo in this is fantastic, really heavy in tone, points to a lot of... like the band's hero, Neil Young, obviously. I think there's a lot of like that guitar sound in it. There's a really dark undertone to this song, as you mentioned. And yeah, like the way it kind of sprawls and moves along at this kind of creeping kind of pace. Like it's not a go-to Pearl Jam classic, but I still think it's a fantastic song all the same.
This is a real like appreciating Pearl Jam for what they do beyond simple rock music.
Mm.
Yeah, great tune.
Mm.
Number 84, this is Metallica. This is I Disappear. Metallica making their return to the Triple J Hottest 100, coming in at number 84 with a song called I Disappear. It comes from the soundtrack to the Tom Cruise classic Mission Impossible 2.
It's the worst Mission Impossible. Comfortably.
Oh, yeah. But
comfortably. You can't fight me on this.
I don't know. To me, there are no bad Mission Impossibles.
I can think of one.
Look, you know, I may have gotten really excited when I found out that it was on the Mission Impossible 2 soundtrack, not because of this song, but for certain other songs we might talk about, maybe.
Oh,
doesn't
maybe
matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. I know why you wanna hate me. Who knows what that could be?
It'll just be one of those days.
Know, and other people do know.
I don't know.
Oh, okay, it looked like you did know.
Take a look around on the internet and you'll find it.
This is going to be fantastic, Dave.
Oh, yeah, you're going to hate it, and I know why you want to hate it.
All right, so the real story here is we were talking last week about Madonna and how music was one of the first Napster kind of like lawsuit songs. The most famous band v Napster case of all is Metallica v Napster, and this was the song that kicked that off.
Money, good, this Napster bad.
Yeah, so this was being aired on US radio stations, and Metallica were like, how is this prior to release being on these radio stations? And they found out it was because it was being spread around on Napster somehow.
Ah.
And that is how that all started. This is so funny, man. Like, I literally laughed out loud because one of the first things you hear lyrically is
hey, I went down the road.
That is exactly what we do when we're making fun of Metallica.
James Fat Albert Hetfield.
Like, if I was being complimentary, I think that the song is kind of trying to embody a bit of a blues soul to it. You know, in the
also,
way that
it's trying to re-embody into Sandman's riff.
Dude.
Yeah. Like, pretty
dude,
much.
I'm not even a big Metallica fan. And I'm like, yeah, you guys want to do it into Sandman too.
And I'm so upset, considering that we have the Unforgiven trilogy.
Yeah, they already know how to do sequels. Just name it.
Just do another franchise.
Where's the other Sandman again?
Yeah, yeah.
Sandman comes back.
Yeah, what you could have done and should have done, because you barely disguise it as being as part of the Sandman expanded universe. It's clearly there. But the hey-hey-heys aren't just at the beginning. That's most of the fucking song, because the song is repetitive as shit as well. If you love that send-up, then, like, off you go. That's what you got. This is definitely the sign of Saint Anger to come.
Oh boy.
Like, when you hear this track, it is just so unsurprising that they're on the verge of making Saint Anger the most like hated and reviled metal album of all time, aside from maybe Lulu.
I was gonna say
also,
until the one
they,
after
which they also made. I can't believe this is the same band that made Master of Goddamn Puppets. I listened to Puppets recently. It's so fucking good. Like, hey,
It's very pantomime-y.
It's so... And have you seen the clip?
Look out, Metallica. He's behind you.
Look out, Metallica. They're playing your song on the radio.
Yeah, the film clip is so essential to part of experiencing this song, I think.
Because all... The film clip.
Oh, it's good, man. It's like... It's them playing on like a... Like the top of a desert. Like a desert peak kind of thing.
Yeah.
Guess which country? It's America.
Interspersed with clips of like the band members. Like one of them's like getting hassled by the suits.
Oh, is he?
It's them just like being in locations where like action-y things happen. Hetfield jumping out of a building and shit. The film clip is exactly what a early 2000s action movie soundtrack song is. It's so spot on for how the fact.
But it's also what a Metallica film clip is. Like, it's just the perfect crossover of those two things. Like, you can just tell, like, Metallica are just kind of like, they have the money to make their own action film.
Yeah.
But I would absolutely watch that.
It would just be frowned upon
I'd watch that
for them to do. But, like... It just outs Metallica as like, you know, in Parks and Rec, how like Andy sets up in his own living room and he like crashes through his own window and like, does his own action film in his own house.
It's that.
Like, that's every member of Metallica. Like that's, they were just doing that all the time.
Musically, right, does this feel more like...
Bad.
It feels more like there's like a grunge sound to this, more so than just traditional metal, right? I guess because it's a bit shorter, kind of short, fast riff work compared to like, I guess like, again, right, it is obviously drawing on... similar chord progression to Enter Sandman's riff, but
just the structure of the riff as well, like in the way that it kind of progresses and stuff, like it's just
like overall as a non-Metallica fan, I thought this was like not that bad.
Yeah, I was like, this is fine.
It's fine.
It's kind of fun in the chorus, like there's a bit of pop sensibility. You know, I was like, you know what, whatever.
Yeah. But we're not Metallica fans, so it's okay for us to think it's all right.
Yeah.
Even better, it's probably really good for us to big it up to other Metallica fans. Like all the classic Master of Puppets, Enter Sandman, I Disappear, that's a big one.
Yeah.
There are Metallica fans who just ride for their whole discography.
Yeah,
though,
yeah, of course. Well, clearly, you know, like who else is voting for it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who
big
is?
Big Mission Impossible heads.
Yeah, maybe.
You.
Your mate.
Tom Cruise.
The worst one.
It is the worst one. Actually, I didn't see the most recent one. So.
Oh, that one's good.
Yeah, that was really good. The one with Alec Baldwin.
He's in a couple.
Yeah. But, and yeah. Simon Pegg. And
he's definitely in a few. Yeah.
Baby Yoda's there.
Baby Yoda. Fred Durst. So what you want to do? Lot of mates. Lot of mates.
They certainly half-assed it with the lyrics, though. Like, every verse is just them saying, hey, hey, hey. And like, I went down the road. And like, hey, hey, hey.
Yeah, it's like, what the fuck are you talking
then
about,
son? Then I went
to
the shops and that. Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, hey, hey. I went to the hat store today. And I got myself a hat.
Yeah.
Hey, 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 hey. Yeah, the lyrics were an absolute afterthought. This is clearly they've been contracted to write, hey, it's the early 2000s. We need to have a sound that defines action movie soundtracks. And they were like...
To its credit, it does have a very action movie sound to it. Like,
I can, that's the thing, right?
Yeah, like, I can imagine shit blowing up in the background while this is going.
Yeah, and that's exactly what the song is for, right? And so to that extent, I guess it achieved its goal, but... I still think it's kind of an okay song.
It is what it is. It's no one's favorite Metallica song.
I reckon it is. It might be mine. It's all right.
Now,
good bit.
I don't want to be quoted on this, but I am somewhat sure that this is the final Metallica song to feature Jason Newsted on bass guitar before he promptly quit in the year 2001.
That is correct.
Well, there you go.
It is this morning.
There you go.
Yeah.
He asked Metallica, hey, can we take a break for a year?
How many times did he say, hey?
Hey. And that's how we got the idea. James is like writing down a song.
By God, he's got it.
While Jason's trying to talk to him.
You're a genius.
He wanted Metallica to take a break for a year or so he could work on a side project.
Could we just stop? Before we do something.
We regret.
Do you have other things on? No, I just...
We need to stop
this. I don't
this.
Want to do it for a bit, at
last
least.
Night, I was visited by three ghosts.
Yeah, they were Saint Anger, Death Magnetic, and Lulu.
All the ghosts were Metallica yet to come.
Yeah. I'm the ghost of Metallica yet to come. Well, the other guy was that. There's another one as well. You're going to have to strap in. Yeah, but he left because he wanted to work on his like one of his side projects.
Yeah, his solid project, Newstead.
Yeah, and...
And how good was it?
Not great.
Well, it wasn't Saint Anger. So.
Not great, Bob.
Yeah, I was like, how does it compare to Lulu?
And then who replaced him, David?
A guy called Robert Trujillo. Yeah.
And he's
Trujillo?
Still in the band
Trujillo.
Now, isn't it?
Yeah. From Suicidal Tendencies.
From Suicidal Tendencies, yes, indeed. Whose son, maybe a year or two ago...
Is a pro wrestler.
No.
Oh, took a guess.
That was no,
pretty good guess.
Filled in on bass for a band we will be talking about later. Like this episode.
Oh my God.
Really?
Yes.
Man. I better know which one.
Yeah, same.
Oh, yes.
But I really want it to be the next band.
Also, this song features one of the coolest things that I've ever seen on a Wikipedia page, which is a world map with little pins noting everywhere that this song has ever been performed.
There's no, so shit.
There's
I'm
no
looking at the map now. It's terrible.
There's no body copy suggesting that it's going to be a map.
I've never seen that on any other artist.
This is needless.
Like, any
someone
other
made that.
Yeah.
Someone thought of it.
What an afternoon
but
they
it's,
had.
But it's just not that impressive.
Oh, come on. Well, it's a good afternoon.
Well, the fact there's so little means like it's a rarity.
For me, a rarity would be like 10, but there's like 40 or something.
Is Australia on that map?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, bitch.
There we go.
Number 84.
Four dots in Australia.
What about France?
We're testing Nathan's geography skills here.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like yes for France, no for the UK.
Ooh.
Brexit and all that.
Yeah. And number 83. This is Skunk Hour with Kick in the Door.
Oh, right in the door.
Oof. Oof!
That's how they got in the countdown.
One, two, I count to five and you're still in there, I'm gonna kick in the door.
Well, I hope Skunk Hour have a warrant.
Four and a half.
Soft machine, where have you been? Reading your stars in magazines. Plastic bags, bubble wrap.
Hour coming in at number 83 with Kick in the Door. All right, here we go. Skunk Hour back again. I reckon we're up to like four or five times.
This is the fourth.
This is the fourth and, spoiler alert, final. But the first time I was like, we'll never hear this band again. And the second time I was like, well, surely not. Like,
yeah.
Previously, we spoke about them in 95, 97, 99 with the songs Up to Our Necks in It, Weightlessness, and Home.
I think I didn't mind Weightlessness.
That's the order in which I prefer them.
Oh, yeah.
That's, yeah.
I wonder where this one will fall if that trajectory will continue. this is from their last record called The Go, which it was their first major label release on Universal. Because ostensibly they were like a funky band, yeah?
Yeah.
Ostensibly.
Funky band.
Yeah, ostensibly in bold, because this is not that funky. This being their major label debut, maybe they tried to up the poppiness or whatever, and it feels like that, because like, I'm not saying that their other shit was amazing, but like, this feels so middle of the road, video hits at 11 in the morning, generic stuff, right? Like, the funk sound is practically entirely gone.
Yeah.
There's sounds in here that could have been in like a cool kind of indie rock sound, but they've been watered down to like soft drink commercial pop.
Yeah.
Out of the four songs, I have the least sense of the identity of Skunk Hour in this song, like... Yeah. This could be any band. Well, whereas the other three songs, whether we liked them or not, they were fairly unique.
Yeah.
No one else was doing it in the countdown.
Yeah, I don't know exactly where it comes in as well. I think it's partly production. I think it's partly vocal performance. I just want, just scuff it up a bit. You know what I mean? Like, get a little bit mad about something. Well, think about how great Metallica used to be, and then you channel that.
I can't think of music less suited to kicking down a door.
That's it, right? Mm. You don't have to...
Kick in the door! That's not... Nothing's moving.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like the little, like, piano chords that punctuate it. Like, I think there's enough of a groove here. You know what I actually
nice little
think
sevenths and stuff like that.
You know what I actually think it needs? It needs to be faster.
Yeah.
Just a little bit faster. Just a little bit more energy.
Maybe try playing it back on YouTube at 1.25 speed.
Soft machine, where have you been?
Too fast. 1.1.
Soft machine.
Yeah.
1.15 maybe.
Okay. And like, you play it through like a good speaker, but in like a room that has some like reverb.
Oh, yeah.
Just scuff it up a bit.
Mm.
My favorite thing about Skunk Hour, whenever it comes up, is we once again get to bring up that Del, the vocalist who left Skunk Hour sometime before, because this is very much the band. We talked about the last time we talked about Skunk Hour, they were saying like they weren't going to continue, but they released that single, which made them then proceed to release the album. And they broke up soon after the release of that because, again, it just didn't... They were just becoming disillusioned with the music industry, which is sad and crap. Like, and I can see how you'd kind of do that and how it must be hard to make music from that place as well. But Del, who was in the band long before any of that happened...
Was he the spoken word guy?
He was the spoken word guy who left to pursue a career... as an animator for Disney.
Oh, yeah.
So
he got that mouse money.
He got that mouse money. And he, for we know, was working on either The Emperor's New Groove or Monsters, Inc. at this time.
Or Kim Possible.
Whoa. Yeah. Maybe.
Fuck.
Have you read the quote from vocalist A.L. Larkin about why they broke up before?
No, do you have it?
Yeah, he says, we decided that we'd rather move on now and look at some other possibilities while we're still drawing big crowds. Unfortunately, the last album was only heard on Triple J and some community stations, so we didn't really reach the mainstream with it. This was despite our hopes that the album might take us to another level. It was given great reviews, and we really thought the music got back in touch with the fans, but we overall just wanted to go out on a high, which we didn't want to overstay our welcome. Bemoaning only getting a play on Triple J sounds a bit snooty to me.
Well, I mean, nowadays, but you have to understand that Triple J was occupying a different spot. But that is super funny considering that now the complaint from bands is we never got played on Triple J. Triple J passed us over.
Yeah.
Wah.
Look, yeah, there are some nice chordal flourishes and there's a couple of okay things. But I think the home truth about Skunk Hour is that they could never be described as someone's favorite band. You look at the other four bands that we are talking about in this episode, all of them, regardless of your opinion of them overall, could easily be positioned and posited as someone's favorite band.
Absolutely.
I don't think Skunk Hour fill that void for in anything they've done creatively.
I reckon at the time... I reckon at the time there were people that would have been like super into Skunk Hour. Less so with this song, but I think that the stuff we've heard, they've shown that they were trying to do things that other people weren't doing, and I reckon there would have been people that connected heaps with that. I reckon they were probably great live.
I can see that.
Whether they're still that person's favorite band, but I'm really bummed out by that quote. The idea of like, we want to end on a high and then it just doesn't work.
Mm.
Oh, man.
But they say, like, we wanted to go out on a high, kind of implying that, like, they were happy, very happy creatively with it. And said, while we're still drawing big crowds. Did they go on to do anything else, the members kind of thing?
Not really. No need. They got that Disney money.
One of them does.
No, I don't think he's passing on that mouse money.
Oh, you reckon?
I don't think Del... No, Del I reckon left the band.
I reckon beforehand, he would have been like, if I ever get that mouse money, I'm going to share it. But then once you're over there, you've got...
Oh, where do you think you're going?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't think it would. You'd be like, I'm leaving the band. I want to get into Karoon Animation. And I'm like, okay, right, good for you. And then he'd be working little animation jobs before he struck it big and went over to Disney. It's like, if they...
He went straight to Disney, from what I understand.
He's out of the door.
Walk straight in.
I'm sure we had to do
it. He kicked it down.
Yeah.
That's what this song is about.
That's what the song was about.
Yeah. I like your moxie. You're in.
But like,
a lot of balls, kid. I'm just having fun
being Mickey.
I don't know whether that comes across.
If they like left him and said, like, you're not in the band anymore, if they then got like super big, do you reckon they'd be like writing him checks? You have a very kind view. Let the record show Nathan was nodding very enthusiastically.
Very naively. Like, everyone stays friends forever, right? Right?
Right?
They probably still live in the same house.
Yeah.
We should all, like, rewatch The Emperor's New Groove and see whether any of it can be misconstrued.
As giant.
Or construed.
Why that one particular idea?
Because it came out in 2000.
Oh, okay.
It's fucking great.
And whether there's any,
someone probably kicks a door down in
it. David Spade.
Maybe this was angling for a soundtrack spot.
Man, that would be like, that'd be so funny.
What was the guy's name? Del?
Del.
So I'm looking like, up, yeah.
Hey, Del, we've...
This song's called Monsters, Inc. I don't know, just...
We're in a song. Maybe you could just... Look, you know, we know you're busy. Maybe you could just show it to... You know, if you could just get it in front of the right person,
you know, Del, the right mouse, any mouse.
Any mouse.
I know.
I'll tell you what Del Larkin was working on in 2000. One.
You know?
I went to his IMDb page.
Off he goes.
An extremely goofy movie.
Oh, he did the Groovy one!
Hell yeah, brother!
Wait, is that the good one or the other one? Isn't the good one
They all have Goofy. It's a win.
Trick question, bitch!
Damn, I outed myself as an idiot.
Fuck, dude, you just played yourself so hard.
No, that's the sequel. It's the crappier one. Goofy movie is the good one.
A Goofy movie.
Yeah.
Right?
They're both good.
Are they both good though?
Yes.
But they can't both have that cool song at the start. Where...
Oh, gotta be getting Goofy.
Yeah. With Max.
Man, this guy's a real sequel guy.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah, he's. I'm not sure.
You got to do your time in the sequels before you get graduated.
You're on the B team.
I'm not sure if this is his entire career as an animator, and I really hope it fucking isn't because there's only 10 titles.
It takes a long time to draw shit, man.
But he worked on The Jungle Book 2 2003.
That's all right.
Peter Pan 2, Return to Neverland. Lady and the Tramp 2, Scamp's Adventure. The Little Mermaid 2, Return to the Sea. Lilo and Stitch 2, Stitch has a glitch.
What?
Lilo and Stitch 2, Stitch has a glitch.
Okay. Oh, you haven't seen that?
No.
Oh, wow.
I've seen none of these titles so far.
Interesting to me.
Is it? What else?
I know you don't support Polynesian animation.
Why not?
Mickey, Donald, Goofy, The Three Musketeers, The Lion King 3, Hakuna Matata, and Tarzan 2, The Legend Begins.
Good on him. That's more than I've animated.
Yeah.
Like, way more.
Yeah. Not dragging the dude. Yeah. For all we know, it could have a lot of
He's got
uncredited
that mouse
shit,
money.
Man.
Mouse money.
Mouse money.
Ho-ho!
Number 82. This is Muse.
Musical guests.
This is Sunburn. Future kings of the Hottest 100, Muse, making their debut in the Triple J Hottest 100, coming in at number 82 in the 2000 countdown. That is the song Sunburn, the lead single from their debut album, Showbiz. This is the first of at least a dozen entries over the next decade or so. These guys are everywhere. And the greatest journeys begin with a single step. And here we go. Muse with Sunburn. Adam.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Pandora's box has been opened, baby.
Well, that's kind of it, right? And it's very hard now to look at Muse in context because we just know what they stand for. Well, and what
we know what they become, right?
Yeah.
And full disclosure, that's very, very bad. Muse get real bad. And you know what? Honestly, even this song, it's a lot. Regardless of whether you like it or you don't feel anything about it at all or you absolutely hate it, it's just a fucking lot. In fact, I don't even know whether you can sit comfortably in the middle ground with this because it just demands so goddamn much. But I think, and I'm very much outing myself as coming from a context of a 14-year-old kid who absolutely rode and died for large music, for big where anything that was like soaring and big and lots of stuff was happening and it was virtuosic and technicolor, like that is all here with this. And if you are able to just put a little bit of cynicism aside and maybe just kind of look at it for what it kind of is and just like allow that to kind of like wash over you and whatever, it's so exciting and it's so energizing and there's just so much grandiosity about it. And yeah, like there is a part of me that definitely wants to give Matt Bellamy a noogie. Like big time. It's like, you don't need to give it all that, man. But at the same time, like to be able to just be the queen of the generation that has Radiohead and Blur is kind of cool because that's really what they are. They're bringing that more jaded, I don't know, grungier kind of element that exists in the musical landscape, but with all the grandiosity that you kind of had with Queen. I see a direct kind of lineage.
Really good. I was thinking, I think Muse are the maximalist Radiohead, but I think
Yeah.
The Queen to, yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? I mean, Queen are one of the most maximalist bands that I can kind of think of.
And totally.
And they entirely wrote on that idea of virtuosity, which Muse do kind of as well. So I'm just going to come straight out and say that I even now, I love this. And I don't know what's in operation, whether it's like I still really get into this era of Muse because it's just genuinely really cool. And I haven't listened to them in a long time. Like, this was the first time I'd returned to them in, like, ages. And this isn't even one of my, like, really favorite Muse songs. I think the albums that they make directly after this being The Origin of Symmetry and Absolution, like, they were the ones that really, really got me. And then to a lesser extent, Black Holes and Revelations was also really important to me as well.
Yeah, that's a big high school record.
Oh, definitely. So I don't know whether it is just the nostalgia that's in operation or whether, like, I was going back and listening to them, you know, they are just kind of like genuinely good and fun and able to be, you know, get lost in. I can't answer that question. All I know is that, like, this song still does it for me, man. Like, I think that bass line in the chorus is so good.
Yeah.
The piano right at the end, that kind of run, is really nice. And I think the melodies and whatever, like, even the screechy, almost Tom Morello-y kind of solo is really
cool. Bellamy always
cool
has been a shit-hot guitar player.
Well, he's been a shit-hot everything. Like, and that's part of the reason why he's such a dork,
right?
Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you can do that. And yeah, you can do that on the guitar. And yeah, okay, you can sing like that as well. All right, mate, we get it. Like,
I
can totally understand that being someone's reaction to this. But at the same time, like, yeah, where I land with it is I find it really exciting. I could have gone either way, and I did several times, changed my position. It's like, do I come back and, like, just be cynical and you know, like, say, like, 14-year-old Adam was an idiot, or do I actually just kind of give some credit there? But I think I enjoy this song a lot. I still do enjoy this song.
I like this song. I like this record because it shows the potential of what's to come for them on their next album. I feel like this is kind of like, to use the obvious comparison, when you listen to Pablo Honey, this band is very much in the Radiohead before they went weird phase.
Yeah, yeah. The timeline branches at the bends and one end goes to
yeah,
Muse.
To
me, this sounds like the Heavy Bends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Heavy Bends. I can appreciate that.
Yeah, and that's the
thing. I hate to have the Heavy Bends.
I didn't know this song.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I've never really been into Muse. But like,
you'd know, like, the big songs.
Of course. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh, I know
we've
most
all played
of the singles.
Guitar Hero.
Yeah.
But this it's fucking kind of cool. I feel weird to say something that Muse has done is cool. But, like, they rock here. The riff work is really good. Bellamy's vocal performance is very good. Again, it sounds like the bends, but heavier. And I like the bends.
Or, so, like, Coldplay, but way heavier.
Yeah. Way, way heavier. Yeah. Yeah, like, it sounds just like a band who love Radiohead, but also love Queen and love rocking out a bit harder than either of those bands did in a garage kind of thing. It sounds like this is a kind of a cool song. Like, I agree the solo is very good. Bellamy's vocals are very good. This is a surprisingly good song. I saw it on the list and I was like, a Muse track. I think it was going to be something I wasn't really into, but, like, it's kind of cool. It's probably the most fun I've had with the Muse track.
So we get to enjoy this little temporal oasis that we have right
now.
Where Muse is still good. Yeah. It's a nice little trip back in time where we can accept that this is just
right.
Bellamy never got visited by the ghosts. Or if he did, he shooed them away.
But their warnings.
The ghosts are far off at this point.
Yeah,
yeah.
So Muse are, like, very high school for me, but not in the sense that I listened to them at all, but that I felt like everywhere around was high school bands wanting to be Muse.
Mm, yeah, mega.
Oh, yeah. It's very hard.
God. Because this is a pretty good track. And I see how you would listen to stuff like this and be like, oh, I wish we could do that. Because it would feel amazing to perform something that big, that well.
Yeah.
Obviously, kids can't do it because kids are shit.
But also, like, it makes sense that kids are attracted to it as well because of that, the bigness.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? That's a very teenage palette musically.
But also, even though the lyrics are kind of talking about corporate shows, like, it doesn't feel cynical at all. I don't think there's, like, a kind of wryness or anything. Like, it's not sardonic in the slightest, I don't think. I think it's very sincere, just because it has to be so big. And it's also got that, you know, real virtuosic thing that you're talking about. Like, they're really pushing that. And it's the Queen thing as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, to me, when I'm thinking back to high school, I'm thinking about being in a great punk band that probably could have, you know, had it all.
Been good.
Were it not for all the Muse wannabes taking up the stages or whatever. But mid to late high school is when I got into music and when I got excited about music. And I got excited about punk because punk was not about virtuosity at all. punk was about like energy, and it wasn't about having big fancy amps. It was about making do with what you got, but being clever and being energetic and having fun.
Yeah.
And this kind of music, particularly at the time, but I still hold on to it because I'm a bitter, horrible person that can't let go of grudges. But this music always feels like the opposite to that.
That's just like a little microcosm of how punk came about, right? Because you had the 70s prog guys.
Yeah,
totally.
You had Led Zeppelin and the Ramones were like... Pfft.
But it also grounded in high school and grounded in the other bands that I saw and the people playing it. Muse and bands that want to be Muse, which I can't separate from Muse because I just can't, is like Private School Boys.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
Because it's Private School Boys that have been playing a really nice guitar with a huge amp for 15 years.
Yeah.
And I have a shitty beginner thing and I'm not very good, but I can play some Friends of Rome songs. And so... I don't know what my point is, but they're like, I can't escape that.
That makes so much sense.
But this is a good song. Like, it's fun. It like I get it. I totally get why, especially as a teenage boy, particularly, I get why you'd get sucked into this stuff so hard. But like, yeah, it's missing the things that made music important to me when it was first important to me, and I can never like forgive. I don't know. I'm just being so dramatic, I can't separate it from the other people that I saw that were so much the other.
Yeah. I think you've also identified exactly what went wrong with Muse, and I don't want to dwell on that too much because again, I'm enjoying living in the world.
Yeah.
Where Muse is good
and,
for them.
And I don't want to, anyone sweet,
but no, you're right. The fact that they couldn't be more cynical and they couldn't be more ironic and they had to keep that sincerity to be as big, you add like political motivation on top of that as they did. And then all of a sudden you get like
drones or whatever that one is. Is it called drones?
The whole, they will never 1984.
Oh, like, fucking Uprising.
Is. Yeah. Like,
which is a song they performed on SNL in 2009. Musical guests, Muse, and your host, James Franco.
Oh, right. Boy. That's dated.
Yeah. I think that's what went wrong. But speaking of also teenage bands, because Bellamy got started quite early and had a few bands in high school, are you prepared to tell us what the name of that fine punk band you were in was and compare that to some of Matt Bellamy's band names in high school? Because I'm telling you.
Happily.
Yeah.
Here we go.
And anyone else who had a band in high school here?
I'm here.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. And we'll all say our band names and we can compare them to those of Matt Bellamy.
Cool.
Yeah.
We were in Munching Limbs.
Yeah, which later became Run on Mum.
Yeah. And for a time was the Gluten Trio.
The Gluten Trio, yeah.
There you go.
Right.
I forgot about the Gluten
That's
Trio.
That's good. Gluten Trio is good.
I was in a band originally called Attempted Explanation. We then changed their name to Once and Always. I was also in a band called Traders of the Precinct. That was so named because the other guy in my band, I had come up with this name, Traitors of the Precinct, and asked me to write it down. I misheard him, and I wrote down Traitors of the Precinct, and that's what we became.
It's a better name.
Was the first band that you're in kind of like an emotional rock band?
No, we were...
The name sounds like an emotional rock
attempt
band.
Explanation. It was just a straight up bumming around in our garage and playing like funk-inspired alternative rock because we all liked Green Day and the Red Hot Chili Peppers and Nirvana and Green Day and Red Hot Chili Peppers and Nirvana.
Foo Fighters.
The Foo Fighters. Yeah. We may have covered an Audio Slave song.
Yeah. I like four bands.
Yeah. Our go-to cover was Gay Bar by Electric Six.
Ah, very good.
Yeah. Kids loved it.
Oh, they would have. Well, Matt Bellamy.
No, Adam.
Hmm?
Come on.
You haven't gone.
I didn't have. No.
Bullshit.
I've seen the photos.
Come on, man.
you see, diddly squats.
I honestly can't remember what the name of that band is.
Okay, right.
What the name of that band
Make
was.
It up.
But no matter how bad that band's name was.
Which we'll find out. Everybody, please, if enough people send messages asking for Adam to say the name of his band, he
which
will
he
do
definitely
it.
Remembers.
Because
I actually can't
He
right
just
now.
Loves the fans. So much. He would do anything for you.
Anyway, here are some of Matt Bellamy's band names in no particular order. Carnage Mayhem, Ooh. Gothic Plague, Rocket Baby Dolls. And that last one, Rocket Baby Dolls, was the name of the band he created when asked to take music a bit more seriously.
God,
sweet.
Would you like to hear any of those again? I mean, Andrew, I feel like Gothic Plague.
But they don't sound like the kind of bands that would play Muse's music. Any three
I don't
of
think
them.
They did at the time.
Yeah, yeah, probably.
But that is where he met the drummer of Muse, Dominic Howard.
Ain't that some shit?
Yep.
I wonder what Adam's band name was.
Also, his father, George. Carnage. George. Gothic baby dolls.
You should have thrown yours in amongst there.
Yeah. Who knows whether I did.
Test the waters. Like, was one of them kind of cool?
They weren't all that bad though, right, guys?
One
right,
of them guys? Was pretty good.
His father, George Bellamy, as well, was the guitarist of 1960s pop group The Tornadoes. Now, that's notable because they were the first British band, Brexit and all that, to get a number one in the USA.
Wow.
Huh. Wow.
Wow. Hmm.
What year was that? Even before the famous Silver Beatles?
Even before...
Pre-Wings.
Yeah, well, they'd have to be.
Huh.
Because they did it.
They done did it.
And why would they lie?
Is there an opposite of like you know, like how obviously the name Muse comes from like the classical muses?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a name for the opposite of those creatures? Someone who like sapped your creativity or inspiration?
Succubus?
Demons.
Mm.
Mosquitoes.
Bellamy.
Bellamy! Pick up that guitar, hero. We're going to play Knights of Sidonia. Expert level.
I could do that, by the way.
Oh, I bet you could.
Yeah, I didn't have a band in high school, but I was a.
You had a band in high school.
Stop gaslighting us, you piece of shit.
We'll give you the option of saying it, but Deej and I, by next time we record an episode, we will know the name of your band. So,
actually, no. Okay. I was legitimate when I said I forgot it, and I did just remember it.
And it is.
We were called Wake.
Okay.
There you go.
That's fine.
Look, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Was it spelt funny?
No.
Just Wake?
K was around the right way.
Oh my god.
Sorry, see, I knew it was an anticlimax. I literally just couldn't remember.
Yeah. That's fine.
Took ages. But there it is. I think it was called. We had several names before. Yeah, I can't remember any of the others.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
You spend way more time thinking of band names
than you do. Yeah. Just
making
like
a forum on a website.
Oh god damn it. Oh, fuck. Oh, that's disgusting. What's the next song, David? I can't think about that too much. I'll get
triggered.
I'll go into a state, man.
I don't know if this song is going to help, to be perfectly honest.
I'd much rather talk about it.
Well, on that note, at number 81, it's Korn with Make Me Bad. In at number 81 in the Hottest 100 of 2000. That is Make Me Bad from the album If You've... Alright, so we are coming into the new millennium and the new era of Korn as the band tries to keep everything afloat following their late 90s boom. Soon things will go early 2000s bust.
They were really a metaphor for the dot-com boom.
Well, everything around them was like going off in terms of nu metal, but like they were kind of on the decline. Like after this, they put out a record called Untouchables, which is generally unremarkable. Then an album called Take a Look in the Mirror, which also had its problems. And then See You on the Other Side, where they brought in like pop songwriters to try and like get back on the charts, which they did to their credit. But yeah, it took a while for them to kind of get their mojo back. They went through several lineup changes. The 2000s were a interesting time for Korn, I will tell you that much. Like, I think by extension, you can say that about a lot of bands that were like big in the 90s and then 2000s is like, what do we do now? And yeah, Issues is an album where they kind of attempted the AC/DC approach. It's just like, oh, you liked that, did you? Well, what if we do more of that?
Mm.
Make Me Bad is basically, How about if you're falling even further away from me?
Yeah.
It's got that down-tuned dissonance, and it also uses that... I don't know what the official term is, but like when you use the major chord where the minor chord normally is as like a home chord thing. I'll pull up the official term. I'll remember it in a sec. But like it uses a lot of the same tricks and tropes and stuff like that. It's a good showcase of what the band does. You know, it's got that very hard thumb-slapping, fieldy bass line. It's got, yeah, David Silvera's like huge, thunderous drum work. The dynamic vocals of... how Jonathan Davis would kind of use the loud, quiet, loud stuff. It's got its strengths, but yeah, this isn't like a go-to classic Korn song for me.
It's funny to me thinking of how what I've heard Korn, this feels like a far more straightforward rock song in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Like, it's easily the poppiest in the traditional sense song we've heard from them.
Because like apart from Fieldy's bass line, which is super high in the mix... kind of, I guess, by design kind of thing. Yeah. But like
so much so that the strings create a percussive element. Yeah. The sound of the strings add another percussion. Layer of percussion. Yeah.
Like, it feels like that's the only part of it that kind of ties it to what ideas of nu metal are. It kind of feels like a more straightforward heavy rock song. And like particularly because Davis's vocals in this kind of eschew any of the classic kind of tropes of his kind of raspiness and that kind of thing. There's not really any of that.
Yeah.
It just feels like a like kind of straightforward rock song. As far as I know, it's about, David, you might be able to correct me here, but I believe it's about Jonathan Davis getting sober.
Yeah, that was a big thing for him throughout the 2000s as well.
Yeah, and I guess like the opening lyric saying, watch the rise and fall of my salvation. Like,
oh, yeah. I really, and going back to the Pearl Jam song we talked about earlier, maybe I think I just have a soft spot for songs dealing with addiction, but I really love the songwriting here.
Yeah.
I think lyrically there's a lot of really good stuff coming on saying, I'm feeling the flesh make me bad. Like,
yeah.
Again, you know, it's actually linking back to what I was saying about, we're saying it in a fun way then, when we were talking about Klinger, and, you know, my head feels like my mouth's been drinking. Mm. The tragic side of that is here. Yeah. It's like, you know, palming off responsibility or feeling like you're somewhat out of control. You know, the question at the end of saying, like, does it make me bad is so heartbreaking. And also just the whole idea that you're feeling that desperate search for connection in the lyrics and how they're delivered and whatever, but it's also saying, like, I want you to be sick like me.
Yeah.
Ah. It's so rawly expressed. And it's been a huge issue for Davis, but like he's been sober for ages now. In fact, all of Korn are, and they have been for quite some time.
Yeah.
Which is great. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. I found it. So what I was looking for when the minor resolves to the major chord, it's called a Picardy third. Oh.
A Picardy third.
And
because the Baron stole our word for something else? Or?
I mean, sure. Why not?
Who stole
it? Sure, have fun with that, Nathan. Talking music. Ha ha.
Now, do we want to talk about the other version of this song?
Are you talking about the unplugged version?
Yes, I am.
Boy.
Real engagement, Andrew Hours.
Worlds collide, baby.
Did
you have a listen to it?
I did, yes.
What were your thoughts?
When Korn did an MTV Unplugged set in 2006, 2007...
Yeah, around then.
They did this like the regular unplug kind of thing, and then one of the last tracks they did was this, and then Jonathan Davis was like, oh, I want to bring on some very special guests because they'll play my childhood years kind of thing like that. They've really shaped me as a songwriter and as a person, and we couldn't be more honored to have be welcomed by The Cure. And all of The Cure came out and it doubled as the band. And Robert Smith was like stood next to Jonathan Davis. And generally as the song's just going on, Robert's kind of just like providing backup vocals.
Yeah.
Like,
so he does the call and response in the in the verses.
He's doing like, Robert's been doing the
make me bad.
Yeah.
Make me bad.
Like, yeah.
And he sounds good because Robert Smith always sounds good.
And then instead of doing the second verse,
it goes into a medley of a minor key version of The Cure's
In Between Days. Yeah.
You know, yesterday I felt so old, I felt like I could cry.
Yeah.
But it's this minor key version fitting in the line with.
Yeah, fitting in with the same chordal like loops. Yeah. Of Make Me Bad.
And then to match it, Davies is providing backup vox for that. And he's kind of doing the ooh, wah, ah, ah, ah kind of voice.
Oh, no.
It's a
wild combo.
Yeah, do we come out with a net positive from this or not?
I don't know.
I really like it.
I think it made me like Korn a little bit more, and it didn't diminish my love for The Cure.
So, it made me like The Cure a little bit
more.
That's good math. It also features a really good version of Freak on a Leash with Amy Lee from Evanescence doing backing vocals.
That's far less surprising.
Does Amy Lee do the wah-ah-ah?
No, she does the, you'll never see the light.
Like that makes sense.
Yeah, surely if they're getting someone from Evanescence to the ooh-ah-ah, surely they're getting the can't wake up guy.
Well, the
12
story,
Stone.
What was his name? Mike McCoy?
He's from Christian rock band 12 Stones.
12 Stones, yeah. Wow.
Doesn't matter how I know that, shut up.
Yeah, it's a can't wake up was about the
no,
Lord.
Jesus
did wake up, didn't he? Yeah. That was the whole point of the resurrection.
Yeah, those non-Christians,
Paul McCoy. So the original version. So the original, the original version of "Bring Me to Life" just had "Wake me up inside, wake me up inside," and that's how they wanted. And then the label was just like, "There's something missing. Like we need something."
We need something to be a meme in about 15 years, guys.
Like, I get that it was forced on them via a major label, but I honestly think Paul McCoy, like, makes that song.
Oh, because, totally.
Yeah, like, that chorus, like, call and response, like, makes that song for me.
I agree.
Plus,
it's far more enjoyable.
Plus the bridge. That fucking bit is amazing. And they just fucking cut that when they play that live.
Oh, wow.
Like, it just... I'm just like, dude, you have guys in the band. You have a microphone in front of them. Let someone sing that
thousands
bit.
Of people that would happily do it. Just imagining the record exec coming. I don't believe that you can't wake up. Can we get someone to just make it explicit that you can't wake up?
Yeah. Can we get a man to...
Why can't you just wake up? Yeah. Can someone come in here and explain that she can't wake up?
A lot of women say they can't wake up, but they really can. Can we get someone with authority in here to justify why she can't wake up?
I'll give you guys something because I took so long coming up with my high school band name.
I didn't notice.
I was going to say, we got way off from talking about Korn there.
That very same high school band definitely did that Evanescence song.
Nice.
Hell fuck yeah,
I definitely was the Paul McCoy.
Did you have a woman in the band?
She couldn't wake up. No, we got someone
right, okay.
We looped someone in. Yep. We didn't know. No, it was a high school band. We didn't have a woman in the band. Are you kidding me? Of course we did it.
Oh, ouch for high school bands.
Yeah.
Yeah, take that.
Yeah.
Or you know what? Be better.
Yeah, well.
Be better. Pull your
do
socks
better,
up.
Guys. It's easy for us to say now that we can't
pull
be in high school.
Pull your fucking socks up.
Second time this season I've fucking referenced Nanette. But it's like, remember what it was called this time.
Jonathan, have you seen Nanette?
Yeah, and it's just so timely, Andrew, isn't it?
It's Nanette? So timely.
Everyone's still talking about Nanette. Yeah. Well, they might be actually because... depending on when this comes out.
Yeah.
Hannah Gadsby's got
Douglas might be on Netflix by the time this comes out.
Well, it may have been on there for years.
Maybe. Who's
what's
to
Netflix? Oh, that's that old. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, before it got bought out by Disney Plus. Yeah.
Before all anyone watched was TikToks.
Yeah. On Disney Plus.
Yeah. Baby Yoda on TikTok.
Baby Yoda on TikTok.
But yeah, honestly.
That said, I know what I'm doing on my way home.
What's that? Is that The Emperor's New Groove?
On Disney Plus, baby.
Yeah. My favorite version of this song is on that.
On The Emperor's New Groove?
Yeah. When
what?
Sing, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Make me bad.
Oh, yeah. Make me bad. Because he's a llama.
That's what I meant. I don't know. I was just putting it out there. Wow.
Me and Andrew are trying to talk about Korn. Seriously.
Well, go on, then.
Yeah, honestly, this is I enjoyed this more than I did most other Korn songs.
Yeah,
I think
same.
There's something here.
Yeah. Maybe it's just because it's less Korn.
Yeah, maybe that's right.
This was a test for me because, like, as I said, this podcast and going through the Korn songs that we went through was me realizing that I maybe am kind of a bit into it.
Uh-oh.
So this was like the Korn song that I didn't really know, whereas the others I kind of knew. So this was a real kind of like test. And I think it did pass. Like I enjoyed the song. I got a lot out of it.
Fuck yeah. That brings us to the end of yet another episode of Hottest 100s and Thousands. Thanks so much for listening. We love you. We appreciate you. We're here for you.
We want to know what your high school band was called.
Oh, yes, we do. Send that shit in. Hottest100sandthousands@gmail.com or Twitter, Facebook, Instagram @Hottest100s.
Nathan will make a sick meme.
Oh, so many dope memes.
And he'll...
I wonder if there's a picture of anyone's band that I have.
No. Do you have it? Yeah. You saved it?
Yeah.
Did I save it?
Don't post anything on the internet and make sure your friends don't either.
Don't tag your friends.
Don't. Just log off, everyone.
Except log for off. Interacting with your favorite podcast.
That's the only reason to stay on.
Yeah.
Except when they post a picture of... someone's
one of them is
Teen
there.
Yoda.
Doesn't you just post Yoda? That's what people want to
post
see.
Post some dope Yoda. Before we get out of here, we're going to pick our favorites and our least favorites, and continue that ever-continuing story of Carryover Champ and Carryover Chump. Adam,
yes.
You've been a good boy.
Thanks.
You're welcome. You can go first.
Look, my favorite is Sunburn by Muse.
Okay.
My least favorite is I Disappear. I still hate Morcheeba more than that song, though.
Fair enough.
And God, I am sorely tempted to make Sunburn my Carryover Champ, but I think I'm going to keep Silverchair on for the moment.
Fair enough. I am going to go with Pearl Jam, Nothing As It Seems, for my favorite, but I am going to keep Madge as... Oh, no, it wasn't Madge. It was PJ Harvey. Yeah, so I'm going to keep that as my carryover champion. Chump this week, I guess, Skunk Hour kicking the door, but will not be my carryover chump.
My fave, I'm with you here, David. My fave was Pearl Jam, Nothing As It Seems, but my champ does remain PJ. Skunk Hour was also my least favorite, but my chump, however, remains whatever it was, Morcheeba. No, Madonna. Madonna.
Yeah, you hate Madonna.
Yeah, you hate
Madonna.
Yeah.
Hate Madonna.
Morb Donna.
Yeah. favorite.
I mean, no, not
music
yet.
Wasn't,
I didn't hear what you said.
Music wasn't built in a day.
favorite Pearl Jam, least favorite Metallica, but Champ and Chump will remain the same.
Also, I found out actually Den, the other singer from Skunk Hour, who's actually the brother of A.R. Larkin. They're brothers.
Is this the animator?
Yes, the animator.
Yep. Of Peter Pan too, no?
Yes, he was the head of special effects at Disney for 10 years. And then when Skunk Hour reunited, he joined them for the reunions.
Oh, so that's great.
Yeah. Did he leave Disney to... No, surely not.
And he would have just gotten fucking long service leave or something.
I believe he said, I had several jobs and then remembered how good it was being in a rock band with my brother and how much fun I had. So I don't think he was still perhaps animating at Disney when he went back to join the band. But, but obviously they're not making a living off of every 3 years playing a one Skunk Hour show.
But for the reunion, he was dressed as Mike Wazowski the whole time.
That's pretty cool.
No!
Yeah.
But again, green face is never okay. So
cut it out.
Do better.
Pull your socks up.
Mike Wazowski has definitely not seen Nanette.
No, he needs to. He needs to see Nanette. Everyone should. It's great.
Obviously.
Yeah, it is wonderful.
It's really, just like...
No, it's
really good.
Everyone's already seen it. Not awakening any...
Well, no, some people haven't seen it. I was talking to some people who hadn't seen it the other day. It's good.
On behalf of Mr. Adam Buncher...
Sweet, bye.
Mr. Nathan Harrison...
Bye.
Mr. Andrew McDonald...
Goodbye.
My name is David James Young. Everything is good for corn. And this message will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah!
In five hays.
Yeah. Hey! Ooh, the famous corn song, ooh,
Play ooh, we're gonna play ooh,
It's not our song. Also, that's not what it's called.
that's not corn, is it? That's fucking
Disturbed.
Oh, well. I thought you were doing a bit.
Yeah,
you all assume far too much of me.
You're thinking of boom, boom.
Yes. Look, they all have make funny voice bits.
Look,
scat singing's funny, is it, Andrew? It's just interesting as all.
It's funny when white people do it.
What, do you think there's benefit in humor to you, Adam? Interesting. You think funny is intrinsically bad? Just interesting is all.
Just trying to one up you.
Come on, guys.